We could start by your commenting on having gone through the records and noticing your rate increases and also your rent as a result of having checked your records out.
Well, looking through a box of old records, I found that I hired in at 66 cents an hour, but this included a 6 cent swing bonus. The people that worked days were only getting 60. Then I got a 5 cent raise every 4 weeks till I got up to 81 cents an hour. That was three different times. After that, we didn't get raises until every 3 or 4 months, and I've forgotten, although I guess I could check stubs on that and have for you next time. This doesn't seem like much now, but at that time it was pretty good. I was paying $25 a month rent, and as I look back in my expense accounts, most of my money seemed to go for clothes.
What, did you find it difficult during the war years with shortages finding particular items of clothing?
No. There was a big Broadway store in Pasadena. See, I lived in Pasadena then. And no, I didn't, except because I was so short, I had some slacks made for me. I've forgotten now who I had make them, but I didn't have a sewing machine yet. One of the things I bought was some of my real overtime later, I think this was in 43, was a sewing machine. A lady wanted to sell it. She said she never used it, and it did seem like new, and it's always worked well. I still have it. It was a portable singer.
Now, where did you learn to sew?
Oh, I learned to sew in high school.
And that reminds me, in terms of buying things and how you spend your money, did you have difficulty getting enough gas coupons?
No, I didn't, because I rode the bus to work or had a ride. So I could use my gas just for driving out to see my sister maybe I'd drive to work once in a while if some of us were going out after work, but I didn't have any trouble with that. Oh, I did lose my coupon book once, and I had to go to a notary, and there was one woman at this gas coupon place that, she was quite vindictive, but when I got over to the other one, she was very nice about it and said, this is the way you fill out. When I went to the notary and asked her how much her fee was, she said, I think you've had enough trouble. I won't charge you anything.
So you didn't get your coupons at the transportation department or whatever that service was at Lockheed?
Oh, no. We got our gas coupons at a place in Pasadena. It was a special office. That's all they did. Well, I guess they may have dispensed some other government things, but
all your ration books, for instance, you would get there?
Yes, I believe so. I know I got my gas coupons there, and I think I got the others there.
Now, would you get some kind of certificate from Lockheed which showed that as a result of working in the defense industry, you were eligible for more coupons?
No, because you only got that if you hauled passengers or if you worked a shift that you couldn't haul passengers.
Oh.
For instance, some of them did, you know, like it was usually the men that got those because some of the supervisors had to stay over to coordinate with the next shift. I think most of the management personnel at Lockheed, I'm not sure, but I know many of them did get coupons to drive to work. But I wasn't eligible for them because I wasn't driving that car to work.
I wondered about that. You actually have to show evidence that you were,
We were supposed to. Or that there was no bus service there. But you see, they run this bus to Pasadena, so I really wasn't eligible.
Now, did you have to pay for the bus, or was that part
of
the
Lockheed
service?
Oh, no, we paid for the bus. I forgot. It seemed to me we got a, I can't think now. It seemed to me we bought some kind of a pass. I know I didn't give them money every day. Maybe we bought just tickets, but they were only good on that. I know we paid something.
Now, was the bus operated by Lockheed or by the city and specifically designed to pick up Lockheed workers and deliver them?
Well, I don't think it was operated by Lockheed. I think it was operated a charter company, and I think the government had something to do with it because there were people that could ride that also worked at some other small defense plants before we got to Lockheed. I know some of them got off at Manasco. Of course, Manasco furnished parts for Lockheed. Mm-hmm. But it seemed to me there used to be two or three get off at another place. So I'm not so sure, but what this wasn't government chartered, or at least, you know, like the government does with so many things, probably they gave them some kind of a grant or something. And I think that it was partly government subsidized. I don't remember how much we paid, but I don't know whether that actually paid for. At that time, I didn't know enough about government subsidies to know.
Well, it sounds like you were able to save a fair amount of money because it looked like your checks averaged about $33 a month. And that was after the money had been taken out for the buck a month and the bonds.
Yes.
So that it sounds like you must have saved a fair amount of money every month.
I did save some. I saved some. But I always tried to save some. It always seemed to me that that a person should save a little of what. I don't remember at that particular time what I was saving for, but I was always saving for something.
Well, and then basically every 5 weeks you would end up with another bond that worth $25.
Every 5 weeks I got a bond, yes, that if I kept it to maturity would be worth $25. Mm-hmm. And I don't recall cashing any of my bonds until I bought the house in 56, and then I think I cashed all of them.
Oh.
And I don't remember now how much, but I had quite a few because I had been getting bonds all that time.
So you had continued past the war. There was another issue bond after the war,
yes,
wasn't there?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, but I took bonds all the time unless there was a short time once that Lockheed quit taking out for bonds. And so then I didn't. I think I did buy one bond at the bank or something like that. But there was that period when Lockheed didn't take out, and then I didn't get bonds. But as soon as Lockheed started taking out again, because I guess the government told them if they were going to have so many government contracts, they really should encourage their employees to buy government bonds, then I signed up for bonds. Now, usually, I still kept to that 375. The reason was because at the end of a certain time, I would get a bond. Now, some people signed up for, say, $2. Well, then they'd always have some left over. And many of them were complaining that their bonds didn't come out right or something. I never had a bit of trouble with mine, and I thought that perhaps that was why, because it was even 5 weeks a bond, none of this continuing some of it over. I'm not sure, but then the only time I ever took out more than that was during the Vietnam War when they sold these freedom shares, and then I think I signed up for exactly twice that much. Because there again, I wanted the thing to come out even. So at the end of 5 weeks or at the end of a certain time, no, I think I signed up then for 6 1/4. So at the end of 3 weeks, I'd get a bond. I believe that was it. But I wanted it to stop at a certain time.
What, do you recall, in looking at the Lockheed Vega Star, it seems like at various times there would be big bond drives.
Yes.
Now, what do you recall any of those?
Oh, yes, they'd have those big bond drives. Those were always really for people that weren't taking bonds yet, because there were a number of people that wouldn't. And, you know, even when I left here a few years ago, there were some people that wouldn't take bonds, or in order not to keep keep the department down, they would sign up for them, and as soon as the bond drive was over, they'd cancel. So that was one of the reasons. Of course, I think sometimes they tried to get people to take more bonds, sign up for more. I never did. I thought that 375 was about enough. However, I know a woman used to ride with me, had a, she got a bond a week.
But well, it sounds like there was a fair amount of pressure.
You know, it's like anything. There was, however, if you didn't want to take them, you really couldn't. But there came a time that I remember, I don't remember this so much at first because I always signed up for them. But anybody that didn't sign up voluntarily, after they got on computer, they sent those cards down to the department, down to the supervisor. So the supervisor had to talk to them. And then, if they didn't take bonds, they had to talk to the department manager. And there was one fellow I knew that didn't take bonds. Now, he had been in my department at one time. He had ridden with me, but by then he was in another department. And I always thought that maybe his attitude about not taking bonds, he had to even talk to the division manager, hindered his progress. Because he had a kind of a strange attitude about it. He just didn't think he wanted to take bonds. And, of course, the department wanted to make a good showing. And particularly one year, let's see who in the world, every once in a while some vice president or president of Lockheed would be charged the whole bond drive for the whole L.A. area. Well, then, of course, it didn't look good if Lockheed was pretty high up. And they tried to be 100%. As far as I know, they never achieved that. But there were some of those people had a kind of a strange idea about bonds. They thought that they just said it was no saving. Of course, the last few years I realized that they could get more. However, this was a good way to save because some of those people spent almost every dollar they got anyway. So, and then I thought when I got close to retirement that it was a good deal because by the time I retired and cashed them in, my income would be less than when I was making them. And incidentally, last March, I did cash in all the bonds and get a T-bill.
I wanted to ask you a couple of things in terms of social relationships at the company during those earlier years, because we talked about a couple of things last time and then go into when you transferred into electrical assembly. You told me the story, which had talked about the relationship with servicemen in the USO. You told me about the story of going out to Palm Springs. Now, was that in those earlier years, or would that have been after you were in electrical assembly?
That was soon after I got into electrical, because that's where my friend worked that knew the people out there.
And I was wondering, in terms of things, you did mention dating a man or a couple of different people during the war years from
Lockheed. Oh, yes.
Was that relatively common?
Well, you mean common for the employees?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I would say that was. And I don't want to give you the idea that, before I ever went to Lockheed, we just didn't mention this when I was telling about his waitress. I had been engaged and broken off my engagement, so I didn't want to give you the idea that I never had any father or anything like that. There were a couple fellows I had dated that were working at Lockheed before I went there to work.
Mm-hmm.
And one in particular thought I should come to Lockheed to work.
Oh, and they were there during the war years. And
yes, they were there for a while. They were there for a while, and then they had, the one, what in the world, I've forgotten. I don't think he went in the Army, but he left Lockheed. And I think the other one had to go in the service.
So these were men that you actually knew before you started working there.
Yes.
Well, what I was wondering was, we've heard from several women have made allusions to the kind of talk that would go on when a woman dated, someone who was a lead. in terms of their likelihood of getting an advancement.
Yes.
That sort of thing. And I wonder what kind of talk there was about that kind of thing.
There was some. However, there, it just happened in the particular departments in which I worked, there was not very much of women dating the supervisors or leads. Because there was some, but not an awful lot, because many of those fellows were married, you see. And I don't say it didn't go on, but they tried to keep it as quiet as possible. I do remember there was one, there was one young woman. I think she was good, though. I don't think she didn't get advanced, but she, her husband was overseas or something. I know she dated this young supervisor, and later she divorced her husband and married the supervisor. I think, though, she had been married very young, and I think probably married without knowing her first husband very much. You know, he was going to, into the Army, and I'm not sure that he was in the Army. He was going into service. And so I think it was one of those hurry-up things. Later, she, of course, I saw her years later. She worked in the same division I did. And by then she had divorced a son man, and she was divorced then.
What was the attitude towards the married women who were dating?
Well, you know how it always is. People criticize. I think people had a little bit different idea about those things 35 and 40 years ago than they do now. You know, people don't pay much attention to that anymore. But there wasn't, people talked about them. But I don't recall that we ever knew of but one woman that we thought got any raise because we think she dated the supervisor. But she was good. Mm-hmm. I think that she did a good job and she deserved the raise and probably would have gotten it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying some of that went on, but I don't. There wasn't that much of it around where I was.
Now, what about talk and gossip about lesbians? Was there much of that?
I don't recall any of it. I don't recall any of it. No, that all started about during the 60s or 70s. No, I don't think, I don't remember it. However, when I got out of the shop later, there were some, that's right, there were a couple of women. But they weren't partners. I mean, this one had been, had her engagement broken just before, not long before a wedding. And then I heard later from an outside source that she was a lesbian, although people had, we had long suspected it. But, you know, it's that kind of thing you just can't always prove. And both those women, the way you could, the one, the way I could tell it, she always dressed rather masculine-like. Mm-hmm. But it didn't hinder their work, and whoever the other woman in the case was did not work there. I don't think they even worked at Lockheed. But there was, in those early years, I don't recall hearing anything about that.
Because I was curious in terms of, since there were all of the women wearing various kinds of pants, slacks,
yes,
etc., if there were remarks made, if differentiations were made between women who would wear certain style slacks, for instance, and those who might wear more mannish style, and if there were...
I don't think so. Oh, I'll tell you, though, one time, now that you mention it, I rode on the bus from Pasadena, and when I got on the bus, I rode, sat by somebody And even when I got off in Lockheed, I didn't know whether it was male or female. In my area where I worked, I don't recall that there was any of that.
Because I once interviewed a woman who was working at Willow Run. Oh. This was before I started on this. And she talked about the women who wore, whose slacks did not have the zipper on the side, but who had fly front slacks or pants, were often viewed suspiciously.
Oh, really? Huh. No, I never had heard that before. I really never had. But I don't think that was a problem at Lockheed. I never knew any women like that till after I got old, till about 48, mm-hmm. when I was in the office.
Mm.
But not during the war years.
Do you recall there being feeling that an issue was being made out of the fact that, that first year particularly when you came in, out of the fact that women were coming in, women were doing this work. Do you recall an atmosphere?
There was some of that. I remember when I was in Spotwell, there was another woman worked there. Of course, she was much bigger than I. And this fellow said, yes, well, he'd just like to see. They all got drafted, and we were left to do the work. There was some, but by and large, they seemed to accept it, if there was a lot of feeling, they didn't express it very much around, at least around me, but there was some of that,
mm-hmm.
yes.
Mm-hmm. were there any kinds of, I thought that since we'd ended by talking about the USO and that incident, that it was good to kind of pick up on some of the social aspects. Were there any other things like that that you would want to add right now?
No, I think I talked about our going bowling, but as I say, much of my social life was away from Lockheed because I had lived out here and already had a number of friends. You see, I hadn't just come out mm-hmm. here to work at Lockheed. I'd only been out here 8 years before I ever went to Lockheed, you see.
Because you mentioned that you felt that the people who used much of the employee club activities were the newcomers who did not know that many people.
Well, a lot of them were. Another thing, see, I lived in Pasadena, and a lot of those things that went on seemed to be out in Burbank.
Mm.
And, of course, another thing was working swing. You didn't get in on quite as much, although they did have some things for the swing shift, like the bowling and that. But a lot of the things they had were really for the day shift. Or so it seemed. Except those penguinette luncheons, we liked those.
Now, what would happen at those luncheons exactly?
Oh, they'd usually have somebody talk to us. I remember one time they had Cortland Gross, and he told about the war effort and how great we were doing and what Lockheed planned to do and all that kind of thing, and how the planes we were building were helping in. Oh, well, this is Italy, Germany, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of talk. It was usually that kind of
pep talk.
Talk related to the war.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They didn't, I don't recall that they ever talked about costumes or things like you go to luncheons now and they talk about environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody talked about environmental
mm-hmm.
issues. And
do you remember when you mentioned costumes? This was a little bit later, or maybe 43. I noticed in the Lockheed paper fashion shows of work clothes, and then tried to encourage the women to buy. Apparently the shop had certain sport clothing, and it was a way to cut down on absenteeism of people shopping, and they started making those kinds of provisions in 43, mm-hmm. late 43 particularly. Do you recall any of those things?
It seems like I have heard of it before, but see, swing shifters didn't have to worry so much
mm-hmm.
about shopping. We could shop before we went to work. So, I think I did read maybe in the paper about this is what a woman, you know, what to wear at the shop.
Mm-hmm.
But most of them didn't pay any attention to that. They were whatever they wanted.
And it sounded from what you described before that there was a range from very practical to rather glamorous.
Yes, but I know one thing. Whenever a woman walked through the shop that could wear a dress, oh boy, the girls all said, well, I just wish I could get a job like that where I could wear a dress. We hadn't come to the idea of wearing slacks yet.
So there was still a fair amount of discomfort with it.
Well, no, but, you know, the girl in the dress always looked so dressed up and glamorous, and here we were with our hairnets on and slacks, and also she could wear shoes with heels, and we were supposed to wear low-heeled shoes and not toeless shoes either. Mm-hmm. Now, some of them did, and it seems to me I remember one girl got sent home one day because she had on toeless shoes. We had a safety supervisor, and the girls would watch for him. And I remember if he, now where we worked in electrical, and that's where there were so many women, as long as we stayed in our electrical and didn't go around anything, and there weren't really very many machines in it, we didn't need to wear a hairnet for safety. There was nothing there. And so, but we were out in the shop, and they always said, well, you may have an errand, you may have to take this here or there. Besides, it was a rule. And so many of them kept a hairnet there in their drawer. And if they saw safety supervisor Stansfield coming in, the supervisor would come around to check to see that all the women had hairnets. And shoes with, now it was the supervisor's responsibility to see that women didn't come in with toeless shoes. Mm. And of course, you know, toeless shoes had been pretty popular at that time. And it seems to me this one girl got sent home because she had on toeless shoes and she didn't come back till the next day. So she lost a day's pay, or almost a day's pay.
Were there any women, since you locked up your toolboxes, were there any women who would leave shoes or some of clothing there and change there so that when they went out on the street, they looked more glamorous?
Now, it seemed to me that I could hang up that shop coat. I know when I was over in Department 5, and I didn't lock that up. Nobody was going to take that. I guess some of them did have keep shoes around, but if I were going any place to look more glamorous, then I would have driven my car that day and would have left the shoes in the car. But a lot of them didn't have cars. I don't think there was very much of that, not where I worked. But in experimental, I'm not sure that that was typical to see. There was actually a lot of riveting, and things went on out where there were a lot more women, you know, working. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure how that was there, but this was still shop work.